when you renew your trademark, you have to tell the trademarks office that you've been using it. So it's not enough just to pay the money. You have to actually prove to the trademarks office that you've been selling your products under your trademark name. So you have to submit evidence of use.
Hi, I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. If you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, just go to theamazonmastermind.com. Hey folks, Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. In fact, the 10K Collective podcast, which is a subset of the Amazing FBA podcast for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon sellers. So people who are serious about building a real business rather than just think of it as a side hustle. And today we are talking about trademarks with Anita Ma of Trademark Angel. Specifically today, I want to deal with a couple of things for slightly more established businesses, which is number one, international trademarks. Why should you particularly consider trademarks in China, even if you don't sell there, but you source there? Very, very important. Do not miss this. If you source in China, there's a couple of things we're going to flag up that you really need to know about. And the other one is the slightly more mundane everyday thing of once you've got a trademark, how do you enforce it? How do you monitor it and make sure that you're actually still being protected by that? So stay tuned. If you've got any kind of Amazon or e-commerce business, this will be invaluable stuff for protecting you and your business. So one question I should ask, sorry, if you're registered in the USA, are you protected in the UK? And what about vice versa? How does that work, the international relationship?
You are not. Trademarks are jurisdictional, so you're only protected in the country where you filed. When it comes to Amazon, you can apply for the brand registry on amazon.co.uk with a US trademark, and you will be given access. So you will get access to the brand registry. So you can use a single trademark to get access to the brand registry in other on other Amazon marketplaces. But you cannot enforce your trademark in that country. So let's say with the US trademark, you can be in the brand registry in the UK Amazon, but you will not be able to enforce your trademark in the UK or to remove hijackers in the UK. So yeah, you really need to file in every jurisdiction where you plan to sell. And again, if you have a business plan, you should think, okay, where do my customers, where do they come from? Like, who am I going to sell to? So you have to think a little bit more than, okay, I'm going to sell on Amazon. It's good. Okay, I know what I'm going to sell like in the next 3 months. So you have to actually do a little bit more and think about like, who are your clients? Like, who are you selling to?
Great. So that's very clear. Now, one question I've got on that, there's a thing called WIPO, World Intellectual Property Organization, or something like that. And my understanding is that there might be some way to get a more broad international trademark framework. How does that work?
Yeah, you can basically file in the home country and then you can designate additional countries. But it's worth doing only if you file in many countries, because it may seem easy, like you just put a tick mark and you can basically designate additional countries. But what happens is it's a bit complicated. So basically, you have to mirror the original trademark. So it depends on your home trademark, if it's compatible with other countries. Because some countries, they have their own way of describing products and services. And so basically, the US is different. Canada is different. China is very different. So if you file using WIPO in these countries, you will end up with an objection from the trademarks office. And you will have to hire a local attorney, and the end result may be more expensive than filing a national trademark in the first place. And there is also such thing called, I'll just talk really briefly about this, called central attack. So if your home trademark is canceled within 5 years after registration, you will have to convert all your other trademarks into national filings, and that process may be much more expensive than filing national trademarks in the first place. I mean, we actually prefer filing nationally, because then you get a completely independent trademark and you can tailor the description of the products and services in a way to minimize objections in the future and to get a trademark registered quicker.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that the WIPO idea has got the danger of sort of, I've seen this with, I mean, it's a generalization, so forgive me if you're not this person, but Americans can generally sometimes think of the world as an extension of America. And look, in some ways, like from social media, it is, because those companies are based, and Amazon to some degree, you know, because it's based in the US. But when it comes to legal systems, that's a risky approach. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And you really don't want to be having a house of cards set up to you in any part of your business where if this thing falls over here, then suddenly five or six other things fall there. And that makes sense to me. And generally speaking, tailoring each part of your business to the specific job or specific environment or specific jurisdiction makes sense to me, because in my experience, it works better that way. So let's talk about enforcement of trademarks. If you have a registered trademark and your competitor is using your trademark on Amazon, let's say for the sake of argument that it's in the US, but I guess it would be similar in the UK. What do you do about that?
Well, if your trademark is registered, it should be pretty easy. You can report a violation on Amazon and the hijacker will be removed. And usually it's just as easy as that. But with Amazon, nothing is easy. So sometimes you may need to do some additional steps. You can always send a cease and desist letter and, tell the other person that we are using my registered trademark, can do that. And usually it helps. I mean, if you have a registered trademark and you send a cease and desist letter, it usually helps. If it doesn't, you have to be prepared to go to court, and that may be very expensive. But I mean, if we talk about Amazon, if you just have a hijacker, it should be pretty easy to remove a hijacker. That's the whole purpose of registering a trademark in the first place. But you have to do it before. You have to register your trademark in advance. You can't file for a trademark and think that you can use a file trademark to remove a hijacker. And because it takes 18 months to register a trademark in the US, if you have a hijacker and you plan to get rid of this hijacker by filing a trademark, it will not work.
Yeah. And that's another difference between the US and UK. I mean, you have this sort of strange period, as you say, you can file something in the UK, it can be approved, and I can't remember what it's called, some kind of interim approval, I don't know if that's the word, by the authorities. And then simply there's a period, was it 3 months, 6 months,
well,
when it can be objected to?
It takes 4 months to register a trademark in the UK, but in the US, it takes at least 18 months.
Yeah, so I think that's, if you're UK-based and you've registered trademarks possibly more than once, if you're experienced in entrepreneur, then you got to make sure that you're prepared for the massive difference in timescale. I mean, so 4 months versus 18 months, right? So it's extremely important to think ahead. I mean, I'd say, I suppose that there's always that balance between doing things in a really structured way, and lawyers and accountants and, of course, trademark registered agents. It would be naturally erring on the side of being very structured. Entrepreneurs sometimes err on the side of do things first and then think later. Mm-hmm. So as somebody sits a bit in between, I would say it's possible to start selling some stuff in the USA to see if there's a market before you then spend a lot of money with attorneys or trademark agents. But, you probably want to be getting onto that sooner rather than later. As you say, having a business plan. So, all right then. So now we're talking about enforcement. So I suppose we're moving on from the fact that once you've registered a trademark, I guess like any intellectual property or any kind of defense system, it's no good just putting it up and then forgetting it. You've got to keep an eye on it. How do you keep on top of trademark violations? How do you sort of monitor that sort of thing? Or how do you suggest your clients do that?
Well, first of all, I suggest to use like a registered trademark symbol, R in a circle. Because that will indicate to other people that's a registered trademark. Well, other than that, what I like doing is to set up Google alerts. So every time your trademark name is mentioned on Google, you get an email. And it's actually, it's free. It's so easy to set up. Well, it takes a little bit of time to set up, but it's free. And you will know if somebody mentions you, which is like really useful. And you will also know if somebody mentions a similar trademark to yours. And you will be given a link so you can check where it's been mentioned. What I also recommend to do is to do like periodical trademark searches. You can subscribe to a Confusion Watch service, like with a company like ours, or there are many other companies who offer that. So if somebody files a similar trademark, you will be notified. So you will know hey, this company filed a trademark. And then you will be able to send them like maybe a demand letter early on, just to let them know that, well, don't even think about this. I've already registered this trademark, so you have to rebrand. But it's really good to have some systems in place so that you check periodically to see if somebody is using a similar trademark, or maybe if somebody is filing a similar trademark, so you will know. But yes, it takes time. Like, for example, to do a global search, it's pretty difficult, but it can be done on the WIPO database. You pretty much just put your trademark name, and you can see if it was filed in other countries, like WIPO trademark search.
Okay. Now, I've got a question here. How do you keep the rights to a trademark? So I suppose there's always an assumption that we register it and then it's done. But you mentioned something about a 10-year limitation. So how does that work?
Oh, you have to renew your trademark every 10 years. And in some countries like the US, when you renew your trademark, you have to tell the trademarks office that you've been using it. So it's not enough just to pay the money. You have to actually prove to the trademarks office that you've been selling your products under your trademark name. So you have to submit evidence of use. Because if you don't use the trademark, well, you're supposedly losing rights in it. In many other countries, you don't need to prove anything. You just pay the fee. But there is a process that somebody can initiate to cancel your trademark for non-use. So if you don't use your trademark, you will eventually lose rights in it. But once you abandon your trademark, you lose rights in that trademark and anyone is free to use it. So it's important not to do that, not to abandon use of your trademark. So there may be obviously like you can put like a little break on your trademark use. Maybe you want to take a break, but it's important not to discontinue it completely, not to abandon it. So if you go out of business and you are not using your trademark anymore, anyone can file it.
Yeah, interesting. So you've got to keep using it. And I guess there's that sort of usage element. It seems to me that it's got two sides to it, which is the sort of registering with some kind of authority side, but then also sort of evidence out in the marketplace side. So there's always that element. Yeah,
exactly. Because when somebody comes to us and says, oh, I want to file this trademark, I see it's abandoned in the database. And yes, it's a pretty good indication it's been abandoned because obviously they didn't renew this, but you can't rely on that because what may happen and happens a lot is that, you know, a registrant may have forgotten to renew the trademark. Maybe their trademark lawyer died. Maybe they went out of business. Maybe they missed their email and they didn't renew the trademark, but they're still using it. So they still have rights on the trademark, but they just didn't renew it. So in this case, you obviously need to do some research. So if you plan to adopt a name or if you plan to register a trademark name that's identical to an abandoned trademark, you need to make sure it's truly abandoned, not just abandoned in the database, but abandoned in business as well. And we, in this case, recommend to do some, you know, play detective. So you can actually see if you can find the website. And if you found the website of your competitor with the abandoned trademark, you can call them and pretend that you're like a potential customer or that you've been buying those products before. Well, hey, I'm looking for these products. I remember you were selling them, but now I can't find them. Like, where can I buy them? And they may tell you, oh, no, we discontinued them. So it's free. It's pretty easy. And then you know, well, with certainty, well, maybe 90% that, okay, this trademark is abandoned.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. So shopping for abandoned trademark sounds slightly risky business if you don't really know what you're doing. But yeah, that's interesting. But more to the point, I guess, if you've registered one, make sure you keep using it and keep evidence of use. I suppose, what sort of evidence would the US or other authorities be looking for?
Well, they just want to see a picture of your product showing your trademark on the product or on the packaging. That's all. They don't ask for any like invoices, but you should be ready. Well, you should have them. It's not enough just to have the product on your, it's not enough to have a trademark on your product. You really have to be selling in the US actively.
Okay. Yeah. And that raises the small point. I mean, most people will have their logo on the product or a trademark. Okay. Maybe a word mark. It may be a combined mark. It may be an art mark, but it's got to be on the product or packaging. Some types of products, actually, there are people who don't do that. And then, or they put a little sticker on or something. I would advise everyone to make sure, you know, it's a marketing thing again, isn't it? But also a legal thing that you actually have something built in to your trademark and to your packaging or your product itself. That you don't just use a name on Amazon, but you don't have any evidence. You won't get brand registry normally as well, right? I mean, so it's all about tying the things together by the sound of it.
Yeah, because when your customer gets your product, they should be able to tell like what the brand is, what the trademark name is. So let's say they like the product. I mean, how will they know what to buy in the future if there is no trademark on the product or on the packaging?
Yeah, and that's normally for earlier stage private label type operations that can be a problem. But I would say, yeah, you got to make sure you grasp that nettle. I mean, it's unusual, but you do see people sort of sending stuff out and you just think, well, there's no way actually I could visually identify that this is your brand. And if it ever gets challenged by Amazon or if Amazon challenges you, or as you say, if you're running out of trademark, you know, road, you could be in trouble there. So look, let's talk about the final piece of trademarks, which I guess, you know, the life of a trademark, you've made your plan, you've researched your market, you've checked that the domain name's available and that something isn't registered, you've registered it itself. You've sold under it for ages. You make sure you keep it renewed if needed, keeping evidence. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you come to sell the business, which a lot of people do these days with Amazon type businesses, particularly. Can somebody coming along buy the registered trademark? How does that all work?
Yeah, you can actually sell a trademark. It's an asset, as I said. So you can sell it just like your car or like your house. So when you sell, well, you can sell a trademark that's been used. So if the trademark has been abandoned, it's useless because it's been abandoned. So if somebody challenges you and they can prove it was abandoned in the past, it will be canceled. So if you've been using, so let's say you have a business, you've been using your trademark, everything is good. You can sell the trademark with the business. And then the new owner can, you know, pretty much continue. So, and we'll record the trademark transfer with the trademarks office, and the new owner will be shown in the database. And it's pretty easy and quick to do. And people do this all the time on Amazon. Sometimes they do it when their account is suspended and they want to basically transfer the trademark to another account. Well, not related, of course, you know, some other account. And they sell the trademark to another business, and then that other business enrolls in the brand registry and that new business is not suspended. So it happens a lot. People do this for like all various reasons.
Okay. So what happens to the trademark? So who does the trademark normally belong to? I guess that depends on who registered it in the first place, right? How does that work with the relationship between the business owner / manager and then the business itself and then the new acquiring entity or people? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, we recommend to file, like if we talk about Amazon sellers, like who sell online, most people prefer to file a trademark in their company name because then their personal details are not shown and there is some privacy. And also because most people will create their like account on Amazon under their company name. But like a rule of thumb is to file a trademark in the same name as your Amazon seller account was opened in. So if you open your Amazon seller account in your company name, file a trademark in your company name to avoid complications, because Amazon looks at the owner of the trademark and they also look at like who owns the Amazon seller account. If those entities are different, you will run into problems because you will have to prove that you're actually related to, you know, to that Amazon seller account. So it's, you can't use somebody else's trademark, because that did happen in the past actually. So now they are looking. If you set up like a single member LLC, or you like you're the only shareholder of your company, you can prove this easily. It doesn't matter in whose name to file. You can file in your personal name, in your company name, because you and the company is pretty much it's the same. But if there are partners involved, you really have to think who will be the trademark owner.
It sounds a bit messy. I mean, I think one of the things, certainly the UK, we have a simpler set of corporate structures than the US seems to have a smorgasbord of an extraordinary variety of legal possibilities. But in Britain, basically a sole trader partner, you can have an LLP, so a legally limited partnership, which I think is more sort of thing I associate with law firms, but you can have that now. And then there's just a good old limited company, which is, you know, very, very familiar and stable legal territory and pretty simple in the UK. So certainly UK, I would always just say keep it super simple for pretty much everything. It always boils down to, you know, register a company, use that company to trade on Amazon, and then use that company to do everything else like trademarks, and you're done. Yeah. And I guess in the US, it's slightly more complex, but it sounds like the simpler you keep it, the more likely it is going to happen. And you keep it all within one corporate entity, right, rather than separate things.
Yeah, well, filing a new company name is usually the right way to do, because then if you sell your company's assets, I mean, the trademark will be sold with the company's assets.
Yeah,
and also when you file in your company name, you don't disclose your personal details. I mean, for many people, like in the US and Canada, it's extremely important. They don't want to show their like personal name behind the trademark. So when you file in your company name, your personal name is not shown.
Yeah, and in the UK, a company's house will immediately disclose in the sort of, I suppose you can have a director's, what do you call it, a service address.
Oh, yeah,
which
you
is the
can
most
check that.
Private,
really
you can have it. You don't get as much privacy here as you do in the US, but, you know, other jurisdictions vary, I guess. But yes, that sounds very wise on all fronts. Talking about trademark filing in China particularly is an important thing to not skip over. So tell us about that, Anita. So why, first of all, should we even bother filing in China? Most of us manufacture there, or many of us do, but why bother with trademarks?
Yeah, it's actually extremely important, because if you source your products from China and if you don't have a registered trademark in China, well, your competitor or your own factory may register your own trademark in China, and China is a first to file country. So it means a first to file trademark will be approved. There are no common law rights there. So if your trademark was registered in China, you could be prevented from shipping your products from China. So because if they register your trademark with the customs agency, you will not be able to ship your products from China, and you will have to find another country to make your products, to produce your products. And it happened quite a few times to our clients who neglected to file their trademark in China. In one case, it was their own factory who filed for their trademark. And then they tried to, well, blackmail the client. Well, basically buy our trademark from us or else. And our client didn't tell us anything about that at that time, but he told us later. So at that time, they just ignored him. So what happened is the factory registered the trademark with the border, and the client couldn't, he wasn't allowed to ship his products from China. So it was a big disaster. He had to move his production to India. And then in some other instances, our clients, well, they were offered to buy their own trademark from, you know, the competitors or some companies who basically what they did, they checked the U.S. database and they saw that the trademark was filed in the U.S. and then they filed for this trademark in China and offered to buy that trademark to our client. And that's like a very good business. So we strongly recommend to register your trademark in China if you source your products from China.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that's a bit like there's a sort of infamous version of that with domains, isn't there? So if someone would look for the name for some celebrity who is not bothered to buy the domain name. Let's say Anita Myers, you become famous on CNN for being the trademark king of the world or queen of the world. And and they put anitamar.com into namechecker.com and they go, well, actually, that's available. They buy it.
I have it.
Yeah. No, I'm just checking. I'm assuming that you have because you're a trademark. So I'm not inviting competition to do this to you. Yeah. Sorry. But, you know, somebody does that. And then you send you an email and say, look, if you want your domain name, because I notice they're probably thinking your agent's about to do that for you. If you're going big on TV or on the internet, then guess what? I want $10,000 for it. So that's just the same kind of idea, isn't it? You're basically stealing somebody's, effectively, from an ethical point of view, it looks like you're stealing somebody's property. But of course, legally speaking, that's not necessarily how it works if it's first as part. So yeah, that's very, very important. So those, by the way, again, this is the importance of speaking to an expert because neither of those are at all what I had in mind. I was thinking it was about protecting your intellectual property in a more sophisticated sense, but this is like a straight up blackmail in ghost cases, right? So it's not sophisticated at all.
And also what has been happening is there are a lot of solicitations going on. So you may be approached by a Chinese law firm saying that, okay, they learned that somebody is going to file for this trademark in China. And basically they want your business and then you file in China because you're afraid that somebody may be filing for your trademark. So it's a good idea to file in China, but not because you're afraid that somebody will file, just because you want to be protected into making sure that you will not be prevented from shipping your own products from China.
Okay. So in other words, don't respond to blackmail type scenarios. Yeah. So presumably also that the thing that struck me is a little bit with patents. When you put a patent out there or trademark, you're telling the world in a publicly registered filing system what you're doing. And therefore you're making it yourself vulnerable to attack. Although you're trying to protect yourself, right? You're actually making yourself vulnerable to attack in a way. So if you know that sort of thing happens in China, as soon as you put it on a public register in the UK or US or somewhere, I guess that you should probably be, from what you're saying, moving on trademarking in China at pretty much the same kind of time. Is that correct? How would you time it?
Yeah, because if China is a first to file country, so as I said, so it means if somebody filed for your trademark first, you cannot do anything about that unless you can prove it was filed in bad faith. And that's very difficult to prove. The only way to prove this is that, for example, if that company is known to file multiple trademarks, so now it has become a little bit easier to prove, but still, that's the only way to prove. So you can't really say, oh, I've been using the trademark first in China. It doesn't work like that. So it's important to file your trademark early in China, because otherwise it can be a big disaster.
All right.
It doesn't happen a lot. I mean, I'm not saying it happens a lot, but it has happened a few times. It's not a pattern or anything. Most factories are good, and I'm not saying they're bad. But I mean, if it does happen, you will be in a lot of trouble.
You just want to take preventive measures. It's the word I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time we finished talking about this. So presumably you guys would deal with registering in China as well. Do you have Chinese counterparts that do things on your behalf in China or something?
How does that work? We work with a very good Chinese attorney and we file a lot in China for this reason.
And so presumably you need to coordinate the filing in the US along with the filing in China so that the timing is correct. So you're not exposed to risk for any longer than you have to be.
Yeah. Well, you can claim priority. So basically, you can file within 6 months from the original filing and your filing date will backdate. So claiming priority is a very good tool to file in other countries and making sure that the filing date is backdated to the original filing date.
Okay, so you, in other words, you'd file in, say, July in US, you'd file in whatever January in China, and then backdate it so it protects you for the previous 6 months. Okay,
yeah. Excellent. So if somebody file in this time period, I mean, your trademark will take priority because it goes all the way back to the original filing date. Yes.
Nice. That sounds good. Well, there's a very simple, more clear passage to how to do that. And once again, if people want to work with you, presumably just go to trademarkangel.com. And yes. Look into this. Good. Well, look, that's slightly scary stories, but also very good to know that there's a solution and a way of protecting yourself against that. There is always some kind of new nonsense coming out of China, it feels like, and that sounds like the latest spin on business. But on the other hand, if there's a way of dealing with it, and again, I think that if you're selling your business down the line, if the people working on behalf of your clients have heard these horror stories, that maybe attorneys, they tend to be the most risk averse people in a deal, when my experience, then they will probably be checking for that. And the fact that you can tick that box and say, yes, we've dealt with that, to me just sounds like, again, it shows you're professional, it shows the business is fully, fully protected. And again, that helps to not get in the way of the sale, which is where the big money is going to be made. So another good reason for doing it. Great. Anything else we should have covered on international trademarks in China particularly?
No, I think we're good. Yeah, just filing as early as you can in China is important. And you can just file for your wordmark if it's available.
Great. Now, you mentioned India. So I suppose we should touch on that as it's becoming a bigger and bigger percentage of, you know, people's businesses. What are the sort of main reasons that you should bother filing in India?
Well, India is a country that works for Amazon. It's pretty quick. You can use an Indian trademark to get in the brand registry. And it doesn't take a lot of time, but it's not the same as you won't file in India for the same reason that you would file in China. So basically, if you want to do business in India, if you want to sell in India, you should file a trademark there. If you sell on Indian Amazon, obviously, of course, you should file a trademark in India.
Okay. Well, what about if you source from India, which is becoming more and more common for
people?
Yeah,
we haven't heard any horror stories like we heard about China. So it doesn't work the same way in India.
But okay, so if you source in India, would you say it's not necessarily a priority to get a trademark there?
Well, if you don't sell your products in India, maybe not. But if you plan to sell your products in India or ship to India, yes, it's a good idea to file in India.
Okay, great. So that's really clear. So it sounds like in China, you need to sort of defensively register your trademark so that your factories can't do strange things to you. But in India, there isn't that kind of problem. And so the only reason to register in India is if you're going to sell there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So with China, you will file not because you want to sell there, but to make sure you're not prevented from shipping your products from China.
Yeah, so but the Indians don't get around to that kind of strange blackmail from your experience.
Yes, it doesn't work like that. We've never heard anything like that.
Yeah.
But most of our clients actually source their products from China.
Of course, yeah, most people do really, don't they?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's nice and clarifying. So, Anita, that's great to get that little bit in there, because I think that is a really important nugget. And then once again, it proves, as I said, which is I find being in the privileged position of being a podcast host, I speak to experts all the time. And every time I go in, I think I know, because I've spoken to experts in the same area, I think I know what the answers are going to be. And sometimes it really isn't what you expect. So again, just you don't know what you don't know. That's why I would just suggest to anyone listening, you know, please, if you can get a free conversation with someone who's an expert in an area that's critical to your business, and I think the law in trademarks really can be, just go and have that conversation is my advice. Simple as that. Well, look, we covered all the details. A lot of this stuff does strike me that it's all about details. And I think the biggest killer in a lot of areas of business, but particularly around trademarks, especially today's conversations reinforce that, is that it's what you think you know that is wrong that is really going to kill you. So I really think talking to experts is a very good idea, which is exactly why we've got you on the show. So if people want to explore a little bit further, Anita, in what you guys do at Trademark Angel, what do you offer and how do people get hold of you?
Yeah, so first of all, we offer a free trademark search and we offer a free consultation on the phone, no strings attached. So if you want to see if your trademark is registrable, come to us and we'll tell you. And we offer flat fees. We are like very approachable. We're pretty quick. We work with Amazon sellers, so we know what you guys need. How to find us? You just go to trademarkangel.com and you find us. It's pretty easy.
Nice and easy. And once again, the value of a clear trade name what do they do? Trademarks. What are they? Angels. So yeah, good. And so trademarkangel.com. And just to clarify, which countries you cover? It sounds like you cover most places. Certainly USA has come up a lot. UK, yeah. You mentioned. Well, can you just run over the countries? Yes.
So we do file in most jurisdictions where like Amazon has presence, US, Canada, Mexico, Brazil, European Union, a lot, UK. Then we file in Australia, we file in United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Japan, South Korea, India, and China. We file a lot in China. It's important to file in China, actually, if you source your products from China.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. But yes, I think filing in China, by the way, I think is one of those things that most people don't do. But I think it's it strikes me that therefore it could be a competitive advantage because most people don't do it. But if you're making your stuff in the country, we all know that the Chinese aren't always 100% respectful of intellectual property. So that strikes me as a good idea as well. But that's for another day, I think. So, Anita, the final question for you. First of all, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. The final question for you is simply, what question have I not asked you that I should have asked you?
Well, I think you've asked me all the questions and more.
Yeah, in which case we've done a thorough job and we can sign off with a good conscience, in which case Anita Ma from Trademark Agent, many, many thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind. Mastermind's for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. We give you everything you need to grow your business to high 7 figures and finally start to get that lifestyle you were promised when you went into this. You'll get clear plans from world-class specialists on things like intellectual property law, e-commerce, image and video marketing, financial engineering, and paid advertising, to name but a few. You'll create bulletproof plans to survive the recession. You'll double-check with your peers that they make sense, and then you'll make a plan to make a killing on the rebound. Most importantly, you will actually transform your business. You'll create listings that convert, build a brand that connects, and get premium pricing. You'll learn the latest advertising hacks and master stock management, as well as avoiding Amazon curveballs. Above all, you will create a big, bold 3-year plan for a 7-figure exit. And unlike other programs, we don't just hype you up and then abandon you. You'll have your peers in the mastermind giving you insights from their own businesses and keeping you on track through peer accountability and a little bit of friendly competition. And we'll also have those experts double checking everything you do makes actual sense. If you finally want to start becoming the entrepreneur you've always known you can be, if you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, go to theamazonmastermind.com to find out more today.